You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to Friday Night Lights against the Dukes of James Madison. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report for 24/7 Sports, Ross Uglum, and joining me in the lovely Bison Report studios, representing not only Bison Report, but our presenting sponsor, Big Deck Barbecue, Zach Willis. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. Excited for some Friday Night Lights. It's been a while, so these are always the most fun games, even as a player, getting to do these on Friday night. So I'm looking forward to this one.
I'm looking forward to you getting to experience the other side of the dome. I mean, I'm sure you understood like the energy and what the tailgate was like and all that, but this is going to be some first person action for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of firsts this fall, and obviously a Friday night semifinal game, and it just happens to be against GMU. So not only an exciting time, exciting venue, exciting circumstance, but we're playing an exciting matchup. So a lot of good stuff that I'm looking forward to, and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with tailgating and Bison football games.
Absolutely. All right. Yesterday, 2 days ago when you're hearing this, yesterday when we're recording it on Thursday, the Bison were able to add 31 young men to their program. We believe over at 24/7 Sports, between 15 and 18 of these kids were on some sort of a scholarship, but there is no delineation. That's fine. We've got the kids who we believe are on scholarship up there over at 24/7 Sports. We would never pull anybody off the website just for being a walk-on, but that's kind of what we're supposed to keep track of, so that's what we've been trying to do. Listen to the signing day special, man. It was a fun special brought to you by our newest sponsor, the good people over there at Hart and Horns.
Love it.
Uh-huh. And other than that, Darius Shepherd, former Green Bay Packers wide receiver, former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver, has been signed to the Vikings practice squad, which I believe brings NDSU's professional football players total to 13, which would be a record, I would guess, not only for NDSU, but I would guess for the FCS. So we released the names of all the guys right now, or names slash Twitter handles of all the guys right now who are on a pro team. You can go check that out on the Bison Report Twitter feed. The number one recruit in the country, by the way, folks, is headed to the FCS. I think that's interesting. Now, might not have been as warm and fuzzy as some people are trying to make it out to be. We're just out of the goodness of this kid's heart. He ended up at an HBCU instead of Florida State. I think there might have been a little bit more to it than that, especially with NIL now being legal. But he's still going. What was his name?
Travis Hunter.
Travis Hunter, yeah. Travis Hunter, cornerback, had been committed to Florida State for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then was flipped by Florida State alum, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, to Jackson State.
Played the same position, same school, and he got stolen right out of their hands.
Well, I think, you know, Coach Prime probably thinks like Coach Prime should be the coach at Florida State right now, not Mike Norvell. That'd be my guess.
Well, I thought that was part of it as well. It was that he had some bad blood because they didn't hire him in the first place.
Sure.
So, I mean, I would imagine that's the case. Deion could have went and stole any recruit. It just happened to be a corner from that was going to Florida State that he decided to try to flip.
Especially if Barstool is going to pay the NIL deal on that.
And apparently it is a bag.
Yes.
So always down for
bag secured.
The young gentleman to secure the bag, but I think, and honestly, I don't even necessarily think it's a bad thing, but you can see the landscape of college football changing right before our eyes.
You can. I don't think it's going to be great for the little guy, though.
Sure.
And that's, if you are a program like North Dakota State, it's scary, for sure.
Sure, but I mean, it's one of those things, like an HBCU just, I mean, they had a tenth of the athletic budget of what Florida State has. So if you have somebody that can pull strings like Portnoy and drop a bag off like that, who knows who we could see come to Fargo if something like that happened.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's exciting to me. I see the less negatives and more exciting and the new part that goes into playing that whole thing in recruiting.
Fair enough. All right, last reported number, 2,400 seats left. Obviously, better news than has been going on. You know, that would be roughly a 16,000-person crowd. Still, in my mind, unacceptable for a national semifinal, especially, you know, if you are able to knock off work at noon. There is no better Friday throughout the year right. than the one we're about to have tomorrow. But, you know, like I said, more, you know, there could be walk-up traffic. There could be more seats sold. This is something that came out last night again being Wednesday, this being Thursday. You're listening on a Friday. So 2 days ago, as you're listening to this, 2,400 seats left. You know, hopeful, obviously, that there is improvement there.
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to get closer to a sellout as we get closer and closer to game time. But I remember, like, it felt like there was, like, 25,000 people in that thing for the Georgia Southern games. And, like, all the standing room only, those were all sold out. Like, there was literally no room to put anybody else in the Fargo Dome. So
that's when it was so cool, too, when you did. You obviously want to see the seats all the way up to the top and all the way out to the corners.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you saw the people hanging on the – on the actual physical corners in the concourse,
right?
You know, buying up 20, 10, whatever they were, $10, $15, $20 standing room only tickets. Incredible.
Right. And that's when it was truly, they just wanted to see the, like, be there when it happened.
Right.
They wanted to be around the Bison. It wasn't, oh, I wanted to see an exciting matchup or a big game. It was, it didn't matter who it was. I just wanted to be around when the Bison played.
Part of the culture. Absolutely. No, I'm with you. All right. What do you got with Big Deck? Because I know you're telling people not to order Christmas boxes, but they can still order sauce. Promo code Ross for 10% off. Talk to me about what's going on over there.
Yeah, we're going to keep running the promo code Ross, but, I mean, Big Deck's done for the year, man. We're finishing everything up, making sure everybody gets their stuff by Christmas. And the only way we can ensure that is to stop selling more sauce. So by the time people are listening to this, orders are closed. We'll be back after January 1st after we get some downtime for Big Deck.
Love to hear it. Sold out.
Yeah.
All right.
In a good way. Not like
right. Exactly. In a positive way. We love.
We're not sellouts. We sold out.
Yeah. We love to hear it. All right, let's dive into what is going on Friday night with this ESPN2 matchup, James Madison University and NDSU. I would like to start on a little bit of a soapbox, if that's okay.
Do it.
Excuse me?
I kind of, this is something off of sort of a rage tweet by Greg Menard. Sure. After, I believe, the 2019 championship. And I kind of agree with Greg, to be honest with you. JMU, by really one win, and I'm not going to go into all the guys that were hurt for NDSU and, you know, all of that stuff and make excuses.
The Homer stuff.
I think that's been well documented. Mm-hmm. You know, DeLuca was out. I think even his backup was out. They had a bunch of other stuff going on. And,
yeah.
Their tailback went nuts. NDSU didn't have much of an answer. Blah, blah, blah.
That game
blah,
kind blah. Of felt like the spring season, where it was just yeah. like stuff started to snowball.
Just
where
stuff
it went
started
wrong.
To snowball. 2-minute offense couldn't get going.
Yep.
Lots of stuff, whatever. I mean, a win's a win, and they won. However, they're 1-3.
Yeah.
NDSU's a touchdown favorite on Friday. They're likely to be 1-4. I think the national FCS media would like you to believe that this is some sort of epic war
right.
between two battling dynasties. It's not.
Yeah, I think it's more just because of the circumstances we play them in. Obviously, no regular season, no non-con stuff, but it's either a national championship or a semifinal, but they've only beat us once. So
right, and I think like even the forum sent a writer out there to like investigate JMU culture and find out, you know, what the other superpower in the FCS was doing. And they have as many championships as Eastern Washington and Sam Houston State do over the last decade, or 15 years, whatever.
Yeah, and I don't consider them any different than those other schools where it's like, it's a good FCS program, but you've beaten NDSU once.
And lost three.
Yeah.
And are probably, I mean, potentially going to lose a fourth.
And two of them were national championships.
Right,
so,
and I mean, then be on your way to FBS. So I just want to like a little bit of a reality check on, and I want you to be excited. I want you to go to the game. I want all those things, but just a little reality check on like this idea that these are two warring factions.
Yeah.
There's very much a team that has been at the top and a team that has not. And that's North Dakota State.
I think people think it's a rivalry because other people have told them to think it's a rivalry.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think it is. We didn't feel that when we played. That was a rivalry. Even like I said, I played them in two national championships. It wasn't a situation where it was like we're playing. It didn't feel like it would have if we were playing SDSU.
Sure.
Or if we ended up playing UND in a national championship. It wouldn't feel the same.
Or even
UNI. Right, exactly. Yeah. And not the same feeling in, I don't know. We're just both good FCS teams, and we play them in big games, so people think it's a rivalry. And I don't necessarily agree.
Fair enough. Quite the glow up for Cole Johnson. I remember him coming in spot duty in one of those national championship games. I can't remember if he was like a third down Wildcat guy for Brian Shore or if they pulled the Nucci. I can't remember, but I've seen Cole Johnson play football. Was not a very good player as a freshman and a sophomore, redshirted. This is a fifth-year kid who kind of broke out a little bit in the spring and has really been playing some football in the fall of 2021 as a fifth-year senior, and by the way, has been absolutely lights out against Sela and against Montana. I mean,
yeah,
excellent play from Cole Johnson.
Yeah, it's like you can look at every stat. I have his box score pulled up here. I mean, 67.5% completion, 9.2 average for 39 touchdowns and two picks. That's a hell of a season to put on the books. So
it is. Those are Trey numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you really want to make everybody angry, I can sit here and have the competition argument, but I get mad at that enough when people talk about FCS competition.
Sure.
So chalk it up. The kid's a good football player. And I love to see it as like, just an objective fan. I mean, he's been waiting out his time. He's a fifth-year guy playing quarterback, and now he's having his breakout. So good for him. It's a good season to have on the books.
Well, and you know what? In today's day and age, too, like it, good for him for sticking it out because right. I think you can definitely, you know, see like they bring DiNucci in from Pitt.
Right.
And if I'm Cole Johnson, I'm like, screw you guys. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm not your guy, I'm not your guy. I'm not going to be about this life. And he stuck around. He did, and he's done an excellent, excellent job there. Wanted to just check on his rushing stats here.
Capable.
Yeah. 225 yards on the ground on 79 carries, 6 tugs, a long run of 36 yards. I mean, I don't think, they're probably going to do a ton of design stuff for him. Yeah. He's averaging 3.1 a carry.
Yeah. Definitely
capable, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's a far cry of what it was last week.
Right, you saw Riddell, and you just knew that he wouldn't beat you with his feet.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'5", 215, Cole Johnson. He's a big cat. So, I mean, if he gets out and run, he's obviously has the capability to make you hurt for it.
He does, certainly. Very RPO, pass-heavy offense. Going to remind people, going to look kind of like that offense that the Eagles won the Super Bowl with in 2017. Mm-hmm. If I was to really put like a team on it, because a lot of folks up here think RPO, well, they think PJ Fleck and kind of what the Gopher offense looks like.
Yeah.
Matt Entz pointed out in his Monday press conference, there are a lot of teams that are RPO to run. These guys are RPO to pass.
Yeah, and like NDSU runs RPOs.
Sure.
There's always an op, and it's smart football. If you see something and you have a quarterback that's capable of reading that, you should have the option to throw it. It's not necessarily like a soft, non-physical way to play football. But, I mean, obviously you can look at the rushing. Their leading rusher is 800 yards. You look at the box score that we just talked about with Cole Johnson. They're obviously leaning heavy pass here.
Oh, heavy pass. 160 yards a game on the ground. And this is a team, by the way, that played a soft schedule, and we'll get into that. But this is not a team that played the top of the FCS and were in slugfests.
Right.
You know, they could have been salting games away on the ground, and they just weren't.
Yeah, and I think that made it hard for them, too, because if you were truly one-dimensional and you can't lean on a run game when you're up, then it turns into long games where, I mean, we look at the schedule and we broke it down even in the seeding conversation. We're like, Jamie should have lost a few of these, or we're very close to doing so.
Yeah.
So obviously having the passing game is better for you if you need to dig yourself out of a hole. But if you're ahead, it's hard to win games and really lock them away if you have to throw the ball 2 out of 4 times on every down.
And you know, Matt said that as well. He said, you're going to win a lot of football games giving up a couple hundred yards through the air. They're just yards.
Right.
But if you're giving up hundreds of yards on the ground, you're going to have a long day.
Yeah.
And so it is a little bit different. And I'm not, I don't know how much of that I agree with, you know, but it comes down to what he's saying is field goals aren't going to beat them. And so they just need to lock it up in the red zone. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. I always laughed at that too. Like field goals certainly could beat us, coach, but, I think it's more of a mindset kind of thing where like you keep a team out of the end zone, it completely deflates you. If you go and have an 8 minute drive with 15 plays and it ends in a field goal, you're like, okay, that was not a successful drive. If you're keeping a team, like I said, if you keep them from scoring 6 on every drive, then your chances are better. I love when the coach speak gets dropped, though, because it just brings me back to the conference rooms on Monday.
Right.
Monday meetings, field goals aren't going to beat us and stuff like that. But obviously...
Simon said that stuff, too, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
This is not an entism.
It's also, my opinion, it's easier to score in the red zone when you can run the ball. I don't know. That might just be my NDSU bias, but it's such tight quarters when you get inside the 20, trying to run deep, route concepts to open guys up, to throw the ball effectively and score. So we always lean heavy run in the red zone. So, I mean, if they can't get it done from, it doesn't matter 20 to 20, how well you throw the ball if you can't finish it off. So
absolutely true. The offensive line kind of meh. I think the left tackle Fornadel is a good player.
Yep.
But I don't love anybody else. And honestly, like I've said, I mean, 160 yards on the ground, they're okay pass protectors. Johnson, you know, stays pretty deep, but I'm not sure like this crew is ready for the wave, you know, the Mo starts and the B Tom TP of it all.
Yeah. And I like normally JMU's O line is very competent and like even. When they have a lack of skill, they can make up for in physicality, and I just don't think they can this year, especially with, like you said, it's literally waves of dudes that would be starters everywhere else in the country. So you literally get no break, and we've talked about the last 2 weeks. This D-line room is playing out of their minds, so I'm excited for that matchup.
They are, and it's everything we've said about this D-line group is they're built to defend the pass.
Yep.
They don't have to probably slog down and keep their linebackers clean and do a whole bunch of taking on of double teams and all that other noise.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of, hey, guess what, Lane Tucker, you get to just go.
Yeah.
And hey, guess what, Eli Mostert, you just get to go. Javi Derrett and those edge guys, man. I would put
I like that game plan for us.
For sure. And I'm not saying you sacrifice Will Mostert and TP to Fornadel, but I would put B-Tom on that right tackle all day long.
Yeah, let your big dog eat. That's
for sure.
You know, I always thought that was kind of weird that like the best rusher rushes against the best tackle. And now we've kind of seen this evolution where like you get like the Rover guys that they just go pick who the weak matchup is.
100%.
Let B-Tom go pick the worst of the five and rush against
him. Za'Darius Smith, that was literally his job with the Packers. That's why like, oh, they're so creative putting him at the mic. It's like, no, that guard sucks.
Yeah, he just finds the worst player on the field and rushes against him. It's funny how like we break that the old like stereotypes of coaching and stuff, but I mean, let B-Tom walk around. And we did that with Greg. He knew who the fish was. He would go pick and point him out, and then it was game over.
Yep. The keys to the game are going to be wide receivers Antoine Wells and Chris Thornton. Wells, he'll be interesting to watch for me as far as a guy that, you know, how do they decide to match up? He's going to be your outside receiver. And Chris Thornton is going to get a heavy dose of one Jahzir Cox.
Yeah.
Jahzir, I thought, looked rusty, looked like a guy coming back from whatever was going on with him.
Any sickness is hard to come back from.
Yep, and he needs to look locked in on Friday because Thornton is a huge deal to what they do, and that's been JMU football forever. They've had little dogs at slot.
And then a giant outside guy.
Right, and then a giant outside guy forever. I think Bison fans are very happy to know that, no, there are no Stapletons on this roster anymore.
Not even Chris.
Right, right. Yeah. But they've got to lock down Wells, and I tell you what, man, I don't think he's going to get the Courtney Eubanks treatment. I think they're very comfortable with all four guys right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel if there was a one-on-one matchup that I want to watch this week, my eyes will be peeled for this Jahzir Cox versus Thornton matchup on Friday, because I think that's going to be very exciting. Just looking at these guys' stats, man, how often do we see 2,000-yard receivers on the same team in college football? It's rare. Tough. You know, usually each team has their dog, but I mean, both pretty dynamic guys. Like I said, 1,000-plus, 75-plus receptions each, 13 and 14 touchdowns. So, I mean, these are good football players that you're really going to get that test of the back four, like you said.
Let me talk to you. Gave this away on the radio, live on the radio with our good friends, Jeff Culhane and Andy Rickoff. So,
good friends.
We still want you to subscribe, still want you to be VIP members, certainly want you to check out this piece specifically, but we dropped the inside the numbers on ETSU, and here is one that I found absolutely fascinating, and I think really, even without breaking down the tape and breaking down each rep, just points out how dominant this group of defensive backs were. So, Zach, Tyler Liddell dropped back 34 times and ended up throwing it 32 of those times. Obviously, the other one, I believe, was a sack and a scramble.
Sure.
Were the other two. So, you, or two sacks, maybe, doesn't matter. Of the 32 attempts, he completed 16 balls. 9 of those completions were charged to a linebacker. So Wiz, Hankey, Kayser, or Jahzir.
Sure.
Meaning that against the defensive backs, Riddell was 7 of 20. For 65 yards, 3 pass breakups, and a pick by Tutt.
That's the most dominant.
Shutting it down.
That's the most dominant defensive secondary stat line you could ask from.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Courtney Eubanks.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Jaden Price.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Marquise Siegel.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Marquise is so good, I'm going to give him a second one.
He scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Michael Tutsi.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Destin Talbert.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
And Dawson Weber.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
If you're still listening after that, you are a real, real one. But, I mean, seriously, man, like, we always talk about, like, because even if you go, if you force a quarterback to go 7 of 20 in a playoff game, people are still going to talk about the 7 that you give up, right?
Sure.
But that's 13 passes they defended, and they picked up one of them off.
And they broke up 3 of them.
Right.
By the way, our guy, my guy, Marquise Siegel, 3 targets, 0 completions, 1 PBU.
Give him another
locking
one.
Locking it down.
Give him another one.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
I feel really, really good about how this defensive secondary is playing, and I'm excited for that matchup.
I am too. Okay. What do we got next? Sure. Herd and Horns talk. We really do appreciate our new sponsor, Herd and Horns. They have been the title sponsor of the signing day special, which was awesome. I want to thank those 5 student athletes too. Very cool for them to come on the day before signing day. That's a big time in your life, and to take 10 minutes to kind of not only make me happy, but hey, it's for fans, man. Right. It's to get their message out to the fans, and that was really, really cool. I'm a big Herd and Horns guy though, man. I love the burgers over there. They used to have a wider selection of mac and cheese, but their mac and cheese still wails.
Hey, the mac and cheese is unbelievable.
I miss the like the exotic mac and cheeses. Yeah,
so my big one was the bacon cheeseburger mac and cheese. They used to have that.
I know.
If the powers that be are listening, bring that back, man. I will drop every paycheck that I have there.
But you know what? The OG, the original gangster, their mama's mac that just has the toasted breadcrumbs on
it. So fire.
It's hot. And you know what? I'm sure if you were real nice, like I know there's a chicken bacon ranch mac on the list. I'm not a big ranch guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could just get the chicken bacon mac or even just mama's mac with a little bacon, maybe some bacon bits.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Anyway.
You're in my bag now. We're talking about food, buddy. That Boom Boom Burger is phenomenal. Shout out to Hurtin' Horns.
Yeah.
Always appreciate the sports.
So. Awesome. Awesome time to, you know, they do such a good job. Both coaches' shows are up there. You go see Dave, go see Matt, whatever. They do a great job. Obviously, we're not huge into promoting going somewhere else for the game. We'd like to have you in the stands.
Right.
Let me tell you about road games at Hurtin' Horns. Phenomenal atmosphere.
That's where
phenomenal atmosphere.
If I was hurt or didn't make the travel, that's where I was. I was hanging out at Hurtin' Horns. It's just a great spot, man. Like, you know, these sports bars are always blaring loud music and it's dark. Not Hurtin' Horns, man. It's truly
focused. It's a Bison bar.
It's focused around watching the football game. They have the commentators all over the loudspeakers. It really is a good atmosphere to go watch a game.
All right. Shout out Hurtin' Horns. Okay. Getting on to the other side of the ball when NDSU has a football. JMU is allowing 15 points per game. Really hard, though. By the way, NDSU allowing 11.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't believe this game's going to end 15-11. Doesn't seem likely. Ultimately, it's hard to give that schedule a ton of credit when you look at the quarterbacks that they've faced and when you look at overall their schedule. NDSU playing the 20th most difficult schedule in the FCS, according to Massey, JMU playing 46th. Again, you look at NDSU schedule, you're like, oh, that's not that tough. Well, NDSU doesn't have to play themselves. That's right. And JMU didn't play NDSU, and that's why for Massey's numbers, you know, they're not as high up there. But, you know, they lost to a very mediocre Villanova team that was absolutely exposed by South Dakota State at home. It's really hard to get a grip on just how good this JMU defense is.
Yeah, and the team as a whole, but especially the defense, almost feels a little SDSU-y, where it's like you literally do not know what team you're going to get week in, week out, because sometimes you see a very dominant performance. You're like, oh, they have a chance to make a run at this thing. And other times they lose to Nova, who is not a good football team. So, I mean, you can go down and run through that schedule. I just don't really see anything that jumps out to me like, wow, that was a true, impressive defensive performance.
I got to tell you, and we know Chris is coming, but I feel so much differently about this game if Christian Watson's available.
Sure.
Just and I get like, oh, well, great analysis, Ross. The top 100 pick that's on your roster is important. I understand fully the absolutely dominant performances that they put forth against SIU and against ETSU without him, but they were just so run heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't know as though JMU can stop the run that they're the way, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I don't know as though they can stop the run the way that their numbers say they can stop the run.
Sure.
It's a little different when you get out of the CAA, but I don't love the imbalance of the offense. And honestly too, like, Christian is just he's a domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get different coverage and different coverages when he's out there. Yes, you can throw him the ball, but the not that they're being ignored, because they're not. That's not how defensive coverages work. But he takes so much pressure off of whether it's Braylon in the slot or Raja in the slot. Because if you're a defense and you've got Babbo or Gindy, or Babbo and Gindy at tight end, and you've got Watson out wide, you have no time to focus on the slot receiver.
Right.
And even outside receivers opposite of C-Dub in Phoenix Sproles, you saw Phoenix's big performances in the late regular season were all with Watson on the field. Phoenix is a better player with Watson on the field, and so is Zach Mathis. And I think to beat JMU, they have to be a little bit, I could be wrong. We could be sitting here on a Victory Monday and we could go, wow, look at that. 48 rushes and 14 passes again.
Yeah.
I just think they have to be a little bit more balanced to beat a team like James Madison.
Sure, and I think one of those things is everybody stepping up around him. Like, I think a lot of it was relying on Christian to make that big play or make them where there's 5 yards of separation. I mean, if you have a body on you, you have to make the catch. This is the game of inches that we talk about when we talk about big games, especially in the semifinals, man. I mean, truly, like I said, just going through this list, I'm not too scared, and I think it might be one of those things where it's 40 rushes, 15 passes. But the thing is, you're going to be in situations where you need to pass and you need to be effective.
And those 15 have to count.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a thing where you, like the game plan, the game breaking stuff.
Jesus.
The game plan is basically, you know, it's not around passing to beat JMU, but when you need it, it needs to be effective and it needs to be, you know, efficient in the way they do it. There's going to be third and longs. There's going to be second and longs. There's going to be stuff where we need to take shots. And if Christian's not out there, the guys that are need to take advantage of those opportunities.
As deep as I've been in the film with these guys, the one dude that I've actually noticed is cornerback Greg Ross, as far as somebody that's gettable. Haven't had a chance to pare down the numbers completely, but did see that he's over a 600 snap guy, and that's over 11 games. They haven't graded all, 14, 13 games that JMU has played. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about an 85, 90, 95% snap guy. He's out there on every play.
It's a lot of snaps.
And he is gettable. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be interested to see if they pick on him a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, it comes back to me where, like, Raja, Phoenix, Zach, you're not bad players because Christian Watson's on the team. You're good football players too. It's not just all on Christian to be the best wide receiver out there because he's a top 100 guy. You guys can go make plays too. There's no rules saying you can't, man. I think one of those three, I would love to see all three of them just go out and have a breakout day. But like I said, it can't be a third and eight running draws because we can't complete a pass. So it goes back to the tight end room too. I'm getting kind of football coachy guy here.
That's all right.
But it excites me to see these guys step up because it's time for them to do so.
So you've talked too a little bit about matchups in the past with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
John Daka, and I can't remember the other guy.
John Daka, yeah.
They had some dogs.
John Daka was a freak show.
Yeah, they had some really, really good players on the edge. Two things I'll say about that. First of all, you have mentioned that oftentimes they're little.
Yeah.
They're not, they're elite. They're good football players, but they're just not big.
Right. Especially in the linebacker and edge guys.
Sure. So right now, Carter and Ukwu, both, by the way, I think 38 and 33 pressures through 11 games for those two guys.
It's a lot.
Carter's 6'1, 252. And Ukwu 6'3", 255, and that could mean that Carter's 6 foot flat, 240, and Ukwu's six
in football numbers.
Right? Yeah, you just don't know.
Those numbers are how tall and how much they weigh in pads.
Because and I will say this about North Dakota State, they do not BS height and weight.
They brought me down an inch.
Yeah,
I was 6'3" my entire year there, or my entire career.
I mean they do not BS, man.
No, yeah. And dudes are actually that size.
So you'll see, you know, some of these. And that's what I think is another key matchup. I mentioned NDSU's D-line potentially dominating JMU's O-line as being a big deal. These guys on the edge for JMU are very good players. They are not as good as Cordell and Cody, and I think that there's a chance that Cordell and Cody absolutely swallow them whole.
Yeah, they can be as good as players they want, and when people talk about good defensive ends, it's about pressures and sacks, but that's not NDSU's game. If they're averaging, you know, whatever, four pressures a game, but we throw the ball 12 times on Friday, it doesn't matter how much they're affecting it because they have 45 runs coming their way too. So, you know, how well can 6'1", 252 and 6'3", 255 bolster in against seeing power and G 30 times on Friday? And we've proven that before, like the guys we talked about that are a little lighter in the lower half, you know, not those 260, 265 giant DNs that SDSU and you and I have, how well are you built to prepare against that?
And that's what we're going to find out. We mentioned those guys are really good. 2.48 yards per carry allowed by JMU. They are playing good run defense. And linebacker Diamante Tucker-Dorsey.
Dog. He scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
He's a good player.
Yeah,
sure. I am interested, and that's kind of my next question, is how do you attack these guys on offense? I think overall you're going to have to make them prove that yards, that rushing defense number. You're going to have to make them prove that.
Yeah, I mean, my thinking is like you can't out fancy these guys. You can't out finesse them because that's the game they want to play. So play smash mouth Bison football, run up between the tackles and see if those guys want to crash down and spill gaps or get in there and lock up and double teams with Babo and Cordell. Like, see how long they want to do that for. And I think the more you lean on them, the more these guys wear out. It's not one of those things, in my opinion, and obviously there's so much stuff that goes into making a game plan, but you know, why get into outside zone where these guys can turn their shoulders to the sideline and just sprint and run their butts off and, you know, chase people down from behind? No, man, run up between the tackles, see how tough you are, and winner gets to go to Frisco.
And not only see how tough you are, but the biggest thing, honestly, for me is I don't want the ball in Cole Johnson's hands. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I want to win this time of possession 38-22.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's your... that's your real chance to win the football game is you're not scared of JMU, but also, I mean, you have an 8-minute drive and then get them to go 3 and out. That's a problem for
absolutely.
Them in a huge, huge way.
Yeah.
All right. Hit me with your prediction.
38-17 Bison.
Woo!
Let's go.
Woo!
Big one.
That's heavy. I thought I was going heavy with 31-20. That's where I'm at. I think NDSU has been playing well enough on offense. I think they get C-Dub back. By the way, folks, that is not inside information. That is a 100% guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think they get C-Dub back, and I think there's the way that they're playing on offense. I'm not that impressed by this JMU defense. I think they do get into the 30s. I don't think JMU does. 31-20 is my prediction. We want to thank young Zach Willis for his time this afternoon. We want to thank Big Deck Barbecue for being the presenting sponsor of the show. We want to thank our new sponsor, Herd and Horns, and we want to thank all of you wonderful people for listening. Have a phenomenal Friday night, everybody, and go Bison.